Now, we're holding page 64 in Sota, beginning Perek Elunem Morim, Osanin Beis. From here on, the Masechta talks next to nothing about Sota anymore, but the Mishnah says that the Mishnah gives a list of a bunch of things that Nemorim B'choloshen that can be said in any language that a person will understand, and one of them is the Shavua for the Sota. If the Sota doesn't understand Lashon Kodesh, then the Kohen beswears her the Shavua, the all-over Shavua over there from this week's parasha in any language. And so the Mishnah mentions a bunch of other things that Nemorim B'choloshen as well, one of them being davening, which is to say Shemana Esrei. There still is the point that ideally you should say it in Lashon Kodesh, but nevertheless the Mishnah says you can say it B'chol Lashon. Sefer Chassidim actually says that, before we get to that, actually we're going to have the Mishnah mentions there's Vidri Meister and there's Mikra Bikurim. So the Mishnah lists those among the Mishnah, there are certain things the Mishnah lists that Nemorin B'chol Loshen, and there are certain things that the Mishnah lists that Dafka have to be said in Loshen Kodesh. So in that connection it mentions Mikra Bikurim, and it mentions Vidri Meister. What it says is that Vidri Meister can be said in any language, whereas Mikra Bikurim Dafka has to be said in Lashon Kodesh. The Gemara learns it from various psukim in that connection. So the Gemara mentions Tanya Reb Shimon ben Yochayomer Odom Oymer Shvochay B'Kol Nomuch. When a person is saying something praiseworthy about himself, he should say it in a low voice, namely the Mikra Bikurim, namely the Vidri Meiser, where he's saying how well he had done, that he had done everything that Hashem wants, Le'avarti Mimitzvasecha V'Le'Shachachti, etc. So that the pasuk does not say Va'onisa, doesn't say you should say it out loud, implying they should say it quietly. Ugnusa, but when a person is saying something derogatory about himself, B'Kol Rom, that he should say in a louder voice. We don't mean a loud voice as in screaming, we just mean, in other words, in an audible voice. We learn that because there it says Va'onisa. Vanisa, we often translate the Shodash honor as meaning to answer, but here it's not answering, you're not answering anybody. So really, the basic meaning of honor is to speak up loudly. So we learn that. Shvacha b'kol nomuch mividri meiser, ugnusa b'kol rom mimikra b'korim. So the Shvach is about Mividri Meiser, who is praising himself that he obeyed everything that Hashem wants. The Gnus is Mikra Bikurim. Rashi explains the Gnus is that we're saying we're stating the fact that our ancestor was Lavan HaRami the Rosha. Marsha gives a different explanation, which is that the Gemara is going to say not so much gnus, but rather tsar. So we'll get to that soon. But right now we're saying gnus, as in the fact that we have to say Arami Ovidovi is a gnus. In Agoda as well, you have Maschel b'Gnus and Masayim b'Shvach, and you have the different opinions. Where one opinion between Rav and Shmuel is that the gnus is that we start Metchilo Ovidavet as a Hoyo Avisenu. So the Gemara says, Gnusa b'kol rom. So you're telling me when a person is saying his gnus, when a person is saying something derogatory about himself, then he should say it louder, and then people should hear it. V'omer Rav Yochanan, Meshum Rav Shimon ben Yochai, mipnei ma tiknu tefila b'lachash. Why did the Chachamim make that Shemana Esrei should be said quietly? And we see even by Chana, the Gemara mentions in Brachas, there's a lot of dinim about tefillah that we learn from Chana, and he says, "Vayhu v'kol lo yishamea," nobody could hear her voice. So the reason is, "Mipnei shelo levayishas over aveira," in order not to embarrass people who did aveiras, because during davening they're going to be misvada for the aveiras that they did. You have to realize, we have a fixed text of Shemana Esrei, but nevertheless, the Gemara brings and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that it's appropriate to add in any one of the 13 middle brachas, you can add any requests that are appropriate to that bracha, and then Shema Keleinu will be for anything that doesn't fit in any of the other ones. So say, for example, you have a big test coming up, mention an atachonim, that the Eibishter should give you a little extra brains. You have a particular aveira that you need help doing tshuva for, mention it in Ashivenu, and so forth. So therefore, in principle, in those brachas, a person could be mentioning his personal aveiras, and therefore he says it quietly. So the reason is that in order not to embarrass them. Marsha mentions that the Gemara actually in Brachas gives a different reason why not to daven out loud. It says out there, "Hamashmiya koda b'tfilosei." If somebody davens out loud, harizim miktani amunah. He's acting like he has very little amunah, as if like Hashem can't hear a whispered tfilos, and he needs us to say it out loud. So why are we saying a different reason over here? Marshall says the two reasons are kind of interdependent. If everybody was, if the takana to begin with had been to say Shemana Esrei out loud, then fine, everybody's saying it out loud. There's no mitzane amona. Once the takana is to say it quietly because of the saying over here, Shaloi Levayish, then now if a person does differently and says it out loud, then it shows his mitzane amona.
Is that something also to do so somebody does not take...
There is also, yes, the Gemara does also mention so it doesn't distract somebody else, yes. Therefore, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, for example, that during Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, when people sometimes daven louder in order to be able to have better kavana, then you're allowed to daven Shemana Esrei a little louder, because then there's no concern of Ketane Amona, because everybody's doing it. There's no concern of Levayish is over Avera, because everybody's doing it. And then there's no concern about disturbing each other, because again, everybody is doing it. There's really all three reasons are needed. Anyway, we see Shara Lechilik Akos of Mokum Ben Chatas Loila. We see that the Torah makes the exact same place in the Azara where you shech the korban chatas and where you shech the korban oila. Why? So a person is bringing a chatas, everybody won't realize that it's a chatas, because that will embarrass him. So therefore, by the same token, then a person shouldn't be saying his gnus out loud. So the answer is, the Gemara says, Loitema gnusay ela ematsarei. You're right. When we're saying that a person should say out loud, gnusay, that's not really the right word to use. Rather, we should say tsarei. The tsar that he has, he should say more loudly, that people should hear. Ketanya, as we learned, and in this case, the tsar is, Rashi explains, the tsaris that happened with, as a result of Lavan and Mitzrayim, Aram Yevidavi, Vayir Mitzrayim, and all that. Marshall says, wait a minute, then, in that case, it's one thing the Gemara is going to say, when a person is having tsar, he should say it out loud so people will daven for him, like we find by Mitzorda. We have other examples, but here, this is a tsar in the past. What's the point of saying it out loud? So Marshall says, okay, b'dorichak, we could say that it's the daven for Rachman that we shouldn't have such tsaris again. So then, fine, so that's something to say louder. Kedetanya, as we learn in a Blaise, by Mitzurda, it says, the Tomei Yikra, the Tomei should call out Tomei, Tzorech Lodiyah Tzair L'Rabim, that means he has to inform everybody of his Tzar, that everybody has to inform everybody to stay away because he's Tomei. So now Marsha points out that in and of itself, that's more that there's two different things really. He needs to call out that people should stay away from him, which is true, but also we're saying over here a different point, which is he needs to inform people that he's in tsar, that he has tsaras. And this way, the rabbim will daven for him. This is part of the idea. A person has taras, he has to realize that it's min ha-shamayim, and he needs people's rachamim for him. There's an interesting explanation, in fact, because we know that among the averis that a person might get taras for is lashon hara. So as a result of having spoken lashon hara, his tefillas might not be so accepted by the Eved because he used his mouth wrongly. Therefore, he needs to rely on other people's tefillas. So that's the point of a tomei yikra. The Gemara in Shabbos mentions in a similar vein that sometimes a person might have a fruit tree, where the fruit is dropping off the tree too early. Sometimes you have the fruit like overgrows too fast and it drops off the tree before it's fully mature. So the Gemara mentions over there that you're allowed to do two things which are on the surface seem like superstitious things and they should be also as Darkei HaMerdi, but the Gemara says you're allowed to do them. One of them is to pile stones around the tree and the other one is to paint it red. So the Gemara explains the stones has a practical benefit because that way this tree apparently has like too much vitality to it. Therefore the fruit is overgrowing too fast. So the stones that it has to push its way through the stones will help weaken it. What about the painting red? What's the point of that? And the answer is the same kind of idea that people will see it. They'll realize this person has a tree that has this problem and they'll daven for him. You see, by the way, the Avos Yisrael and the sensitivity that a Yid had for another one. Nowadays, you'd pass by a tree with somebody has something on it. You wouldn't give it a second glance, but back then, you'd see somebody who has a tree painted red. Oh, that would motivate you to daven on his behalf. So the point is, the same way over here, then we want to say, Arami Yovid Ovi, Vayir Mitzrayim, out loud, because it's our tsar, and this way we're davening that it shouldn't happen again. So there are a couple of them. Mefarshim point out other angles on it as well. The fact is that the fact is when we're mentioning that our ancestor was a Rosha means, in other words, that we're in danger of following in his ways as well. So therefore, that's also a reason to say it out loud that other people should help us daven that we shouldn't fall into ending up being like Lavan himself. So yeah. As far as this business of davening, davening in other languages, the Gemara is going to point out over here now. So actually, we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about the details within that. So Pisca, so quoting from the Mishnah. The Mishnah had listed a bunch of things that can be said in any language, and one of them is a tefillah, one of them is Shemana Esther. Now Rashi points out, by the way, for most of the things in the Mishnah, the Gemara goes through to find a limud. Oh, before that, by the way, actually, I should mention, the Gemara points out that really we do have with Karbanos, there are certain differences between a Chatas and an Oila, which on the here the Gemara is saying that we have that Hashem made that the same place they should be shechted in the same area, both on the north side of the Azara, so you can't easily tell. But the Gemara points out, after all, you have a lot of other differences between a Chatas and an Oila as well. The blood is applied to the Mizbeach differently. The genders are different. A Chatas for most people is a female animal. For an oiler as a male, so you have a number of differences on the face of it. Then that is going to expose that he's bringing an oil and a chatos, and he's going to be embarrassed. And the Gemara explains that a lot of those differences are not really so noticeable to the average person. And then you have the one case where a person, for example, worshipped Avodah Zarah. Then yes, the difference will be noticeable. Then he dafka has to bring a female goat, where a female goat is very noticeably different than a male one. Fine, but then you know what? He did such a thing as Avodah Zarah. But Shregeg, they already we do want a shtickle embarrassment for him. So that'll be part of his kapara as well. Okay. So Pisca, Eilu Nemar B'Choloshin B'Cholor Tefillah. So the Gemara explains, Tefillah Rachmihi. With most of the things in the Mishnah has to find us a source in a pasuk that you're allowed to say them B'Choloshin. How do we know? By the Soita, that the parasha Soita can be read to her in any language, we learn the Gemara learns from a pasuk. How do we know that Mikra, how do we know that Vidri Maisa can be said in any language? And the Gemara brings psukim for each one of them. For tefillah, the Gemara says we don't really need a pasuk for it. Rachmihi, because after all, tefillah, Shemana Esrei, particularly, is davening for Hashem for Rachmanus. So kol hecha, the bori matzli, so however a person is capable of davening is how he should daven. In fact, Sefer Chassidim actually says if a person is not fluent enough in Lashon Kodesh and he knows another language better, then Sefer Chassidim says maybe takalach tchila, he should be davening in a different language. Ideally, though, eventually he'll learn enough Lashon Kodesh to be able to daven in Lashon Kodesh, because after all, the words of the tefillah, the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah made, have tremendous kedusha to them and have layers of meaning that other languages won't necessarily have. That's what everybody brings us from Sefer Chassidim. It's not original to him, but yeah. Birchas Koyanim is one of the things actually that has to be said Dafka B'Loshon HaKodesh. Dafka B'Loshon HaKodesh, the Gemara learns it from Koy Soma, Koy Savoru. Koy means Dafka like this, yeah. So that's the thing. So the Mishnah lists a bunch of things that Ne'amorim B'Choloshin, and then it mentions a bunch of things that Ne'amorim B'Loshin HaKodesh. One of them is Brachos HaKlolis, the ones on Har Grizim and Har Evel, which we're going to get into soon and discuss at great length. The Gemara is going to go into the details of it, and the reason why, now why does the Mishnah mention that? That Maida Hava, that's already a done deal. It's a one-time thing in history. The reason is because that actually is the source from which a bunch of the other ones are learned. Because it says over there, Va'onu we learn from that to a number of other ones that it mentions in the Mishnah, where it says by them also koil, that they are koil rum or va'onu or other lashonis like that, that therefore we learn by Gzeira Shava that they have to be said dafka b'loshon HaKodesh. Anyway, but yeah, so the Chassam Sofer actually points out about it, that this that we're saying, that people can daven in their own language, if that's all they understand, he says that's only tefillah b'yochid. Tefillah b'tzibur is different. In his times, the reformers were starting to have, you know, the tefillahs should be in their temples, should be in German, and the Chassam Sofer explained that no, when we're saying tefillah b'choloshon, that's talking about tefillah b'yochid, not tefillah b'tzibur is different. Okay, so the Gemara says that tefillah b'choloshon, you're telling me that tefillahs can be said in any loshon, a person should not ask for his needs from Hashem in Aramaic. Because if a person asks in Aramaic, ein malachei asharis nizkokin loy, the malachei asharis do not get involved with him. Now, many of the Rishonim explain, in other words, that the vort is that the malachim are needed to help bring a person's tefillas l'mayla. So therefore, so when a person davens in Lashon Arami, then the Malachim are not going to bother with it. Now, why not? You have two major approaches among the Rishonim. One is that specifically Lashon Arami. And the idea is, according to them, because Lashon Arami, particularly, the Malachim have no respect for it. because they consider it Loshon Meguna. They consider it degraded language. Poshut reason would be because it's very close to Loshon Kodesh, but after all, it's very closely related, but it's different. So it seems to the Malachim like a corrupted form of Loshon Kodesh. Bichlal, you know, you have, as an example of that kind of thing, Arabic is similar in that sense. It's also related to Lashon Kodesh. The Medaktikim of Rishonim, some of the early Rishonim who dealt with matters of Diktuk, there was a major argument between them. You have Rashi mentions all the time Menachem ben Sarok. He mentions often the Machberes that was written by Menachem. You have another Baal Diktuk of that time, Baal Machloikas of Menachem, named Dunash ben Lavrat. Those who say Zmiras on Shabbos have one of the Zmiras of Duro Yikra was composed by him, for example. Anyway, so they had, there was a major argument between them on various aspects of Diktuk, and one of the arguments was, can you derive the meanings of words in Lashon Kodesh from related languages, from Arabic or from Aramaic or from Berber, a language of North Africa, which is also distantly related to Lashon Kodesh? One way of looking at it is, no, Lashon Kodesh is unique among languages. What do you mean? If you have languages that seem to be similar to it, they're nothing but corruptions of it. The other way of looking at it is, no, listen, these are all languages that languages developed, and therefore they have you. So here also, so one way of looking at it then is the Malachim Davka hold it against Aramaic because they consider it a corrupted form of Lashon Kodesh. So according to that then, the Malachim would have no problem with English or Spanish or whatever other, Chinese or whatever language in the world. Davka, they have it in for Aramaic. The Maharal actually gives a different explanation of it. He says, following that shitta that they dafka don't like Aramaic, he says, because Aramaic is the language of the casting. Nebuchadnezzar's people who destroyed the first place of Mikdash. And the Gemara says about them that they're one of the people that Hashem, so to speak, regrets ever having created. And the Pasuk says on them, Zeh Eretz Kastin Om Lo Hoya. It's like a nation that shouldn't have been. So like the Malachim look at it like their language is like not even a language. So that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it that a number of Rishonim have is it doesn't just mean Aramaic. It means any language outside Lashon Kodesh the Malachim don't like to deal with. We don't mean, by the way, that they don't necessarily understand it. Whether they understand it is a whole other machlokas. Does it mean they don't understand Aramaic or the other languages, as the case may be, or does it mean they understand them, but they don't like them and don't consider it important? On top of that, also, you have yet another machlokas in this between Rishonim. Are we saying the Malachim are actually needed to bring our tefillas to Hashem, or no? We speak directly to Hashem, not to Malachim. Famously, there's a big machloikas about various tefillahs where we address the malachim and ask them to bring our tefillahs to the Eidoshte. Machnisei Rachamim, and Malachi Rachamim Shose Elyon, and then Shloshes Yemidus Amurus Vachanina, and so on and so forth. There's a major machloikas about whether we're allowed to say such tefillahs. So according to those we've shown him, the vote would be, when we're saying over here, in Malachi Asheris Nisqokin Loi, means when Hashem is going to send Malachim to help a person, now that he in Avi Davin, and his tefillah is going to be answered, then those Malachim are not going to go to do the job if he's davening in Loshon Arami. There's even an explanation about it, I think, from the Me'iri, that says the person himself, he's not going to have the proper Machshavas if he davens in anything other than Loshon Kodesh, and that's represented over here by Malachi Asheris. Whatever the case, then, based on all of that, it seems you can't daven in any language. Either you have an exception in Aramaic, or you have an exception in all the languages. So, Da'amar of Yechanan, Kol Asher Tzuracha B'Loshon Arami, Ein Malach HaSharos Nizkakin Loi, Lefisha Ein Malach HaSharos Makirin B'Loshon Arami, because the Malach HaSharos don't recognize, or either recognize as in understand, or recognize as in recognize as something significant, Loshon Arami. So, therefore, so what are you telling me? You can daven in Shmanasri in any language. So the answer is like Kasha Hobby Yochid Hobbit Sibur. There's a difference between a Yochid and a Sibur. The Yochid needs the Malachim to help him. Therefore, if they don't care for Loshon Arami or whether we mean Loshon Arami exclusively or the other languages, then he's stuck. Mashenkin, the Sibur, the Hashem always listens directly to their tefillahs, therefore Hashem is not going to reject their tefillahs, and therefore it doesn't matter whether the Malachim care for those tefillahs and pay attention to them or not. So the Chassam Sofer actually saying that to have, what we're talking about, the V'yochid HaBetzibur, we don't mean to have the Kavua Dika Tfilis, the HaBetzibur, those have to be Loshon Kodesh. You can't have, like the Chassam Sofer is saying, let's say to set up a new thing that we're going to have, the services in our temple are going to be in German, let's say, or in English or whatever. But here we're talking about if the Tzibur is davening in Aramaic, then that's valid. We actually have a number of Tfilis in the Siddur that are in Aramaic. that are meant to be said by the tzibur, and we have taka. Some of them are specifically not meant to be said by yochid. You have the second Yikum Purkan, for example. Brich Shnei is said when the Aron Kodesh is open. You have a couple at the end of Slichus before Rosh Hashanah and Ansum Gedalia, Machi Umase, and whatever. So all of the modern Divishmaya. What? Rachmana, right, the Rachmana also, yeah. So all of those are B'tzibur, and therefore we're saying we don't care whether the Malachim like those or not, that's fine. What? The Gemara is written in Aramaic, Ein Chonami, yeah. In addition, the Poskim point out various other exceptions as well. First of all, you have cases, for example, the Gemara tells us, we learned in Nedarim, that the Shechinah is by a person's sick bed. So when you buy a sick person's bed, and you daven in Aramaic or whatever other language, again, since the Shechinah is directly there, and you don't need Malachim to bring the Tefillah, then therefore that's fine to daven in any language on behalf of the Cholah. Another example is when a person is, it says, Shari Dmois Leninalu, the gates of tears are never closed in Shemayim, so therefore, so there also a person is crying about having been wronged or whatever, Einas Dvorim, and he's davening in some other language, then Vaiter, that's not going to be a problem, whether the Malachim care for it or not. And then there are poskim who say that the Rosh brings, for example, that Yesh Omrim, that the fixed tefillahs, the ones that are that the nusach of them is fixed, that those a yochid could daven in Aramaic or what have you. We're talking about like a one-off tefillah, that not. So according to that way of looking at it, for example, the yochid might be able to say Machi Umase and Rachmana and so forth if he's saying Slichus B'yochid. L'maisa, we don't do that, but there does exist such an opinion.
Biggest problem is
So you talk after understanding what you're saying. Well, so that's the end. Yes, I mean, so ahead of time, you get ahead of time, you get the Chassan and Kala together and explain what's going on over here.
No,
I mean, once the Nusach was set and to do a certain way, then we stick to that. And like I was saying, be a datum. Yeah. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ein malach ha'asharis makirin b'loshen arami." You're telling me that malach ha'asharis do not understand or do not care for loshen arami. V'hatanya, but we learn in a brisa, Yochanan Kohen Gadol shoma bas tome bes kodesh hakadoshim. Yochanan Kohen Gadol, which is we have a Yochanan Kohen Gadol mentioned in a bunch of places in Shas. He made a bunch of takonis, the most famous being the takon of Dmai. We have in Al Nisim Matsyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol. There's a lot of argument who exactly Yochanan Kohen Gadol was and when exactly he lived. He was definitely in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, but there were a number of prominent figures in those centuries named Yochanan, and there's quite a bit of argument which one this was. There's also one that says that he was 80 years a Kohen Gadol and then he became a Tzaduki. Is that the same one who made the Takonis, or was that a different? Was that the same one from this story or a different one? Anyway, Eichiyah, Shoma Baskol Mebeis Kodesh HaKadoshim, he heard a Baskol from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Rashi explains this was during the Avodah of Yom Kippur, Shu Omer, and the Baskol announced in Aramaic, Nitzchu Talia de Ozlu La Agocha Krova Ba'Antuchia. The young men who have gone to fight a war in Antuchia have beaten their enemies. So Rashi explains, young Kohenim from the family of Chashmonaim had gone to fight with the Yevonim before Yom Kippur, and the battle took place on Yom Kippur. But Pashtus, the idea was, because why would they do that? Why would they choose that day for a battle? Could be that that was when the Yevonim attacked and they had no choice but to counterattack, or it could be, fakir, they figured then they'll catch them off guard. We find, actually, in the books of Chashmonaim, we find something somewhat similar during the time before they even recaptured the Beis Mikdash, when they first started the guerrilla warfare, Yehuda and his brothers. They realize the halacha is, ad ridta filo b'Shabbos. You have to fight a war like this even on Shabbos. What was happening until that point was the Yevonim were thinking we can catch the Jews off guard on Shabbos and they're not going to defend themselves. And there were cases over there where they actually killed many Jews on Shabbos. So now Yehuda and company put together the Beistin and realize, no, when we're on a war footing, then it's different. Then we have to, then fakert, we have to fight even on Shabbos. And that way, often they would catch the Greeks off guard because they'd think, after look, the Jews are resting on their Shabbos, and they don't realize that they're ready for war. So maybe it was the same kind of thing over here. Eichiyah, the point was, the war took place on Yom Kippur, and so Yochanan, during the Avodah of Yom Kippur, heard this voice coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim saying in Aramaic, that the young men have won, that they beat their enemies. Now, what, how so?
Kippur, no.
Well, the Yom Kippur War wasn't in Kippur. Yeah, what happened?
Come
that was a few days before that. During the summer before that, the Rebbe started shtorming about and a few days before the war broke out, Vav Tishrei, I think, the Rebbe had a special rally for the kids in 770. But the on Yom Kippur itself is it could be. Mausha points out, the point is, this can't have been the voice of the Shechina itself talking, because then that would be Nevuah, and Yerchan and Kohen Gadol lived long after Nevuah is over. So it has to be, necessarily, the Gemara is saying, it must be a voice of a Malach. So then in that case, we see the Malachim speak Aramaic, because the Gemara is quoting what it said in Aramaic. The Shuv Maisa of Shimon HaTzadik. Then here's another story that happened with Shimon HaTzadik. Shoshama Baskom of Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. He also heard a voice from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Shuhu Omer, that announced Betelas Avidta, the work, or the Rashi translates Avidta as the army. The army has been defeated, has been cancelled. The Omer Sana La'isar Al Hechala, that the enemy has threatened to bring against the Hechal, against the Beis Mikdash. I mean, there was a Goyish king who was threatening to bring his army to destroy the Beis Mikdash. The Nera Gaskalgas, the bottle of Zeros, the Gaskalgas has been killed and is Zeros a bottle. So this also we heard a coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim in Aramaic. Because the Oysa Shah of Kivnu, they wrote down the exact time they heard this Baskel, and they found, sure enough, later on, it was exactly at that time that this Gaskalgas had been killed. Who is Gaskalgas? So there is actually, the Rashi says, Shem Melech Yovan, who is the name of a Greek king. And actually, in Seder Olam, it mentions, it lists a number of Greek kings, and it has Gaskalgas in the list. Yesh Omrim, that actually, this Gaskalgas is actually not so much a Greek king, but rather a Roman emperor. Historically, there was a story about 30 years before the Churban Bayis Sheni, when the Roman emperor Caligula, and his first name was Gaius Caligula, very much like Gaskalgas, wanted a statue of him to be set up in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He demanded that, and he was going to send his army to enforce it, and everybody was in a tizzy about it, and there was a Jewish leader in Alexandria at the time, famous Jewish philosopher named Philo, who went to talk to Caligula and try to talk him out of it, nothing doing. The Yidden in Eretz Yisrael were ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh. They literally, Josephus describes in his histories, they literally pushed it, laid themselves down in front of the soldiers and said, we're ready to be killed, but we're not allowing a statue to be brought into this Mikdash. The governor, the Roman governor himself, is having second thoughts about it. Interestingly, actually, Josephus tells the story. So this governor finally, so this governor writes a letter to Caligula. He says, you know, but listen, I mean, you're going to do this thing. There's going to be a bloodbath in your country. You know, you can't really afford to have that kind of thing. Meanwhile, in Rome, you had Agrippas, the famous Agrippas HaMelech. Agrippa in English, he's called in English. He was a personal friend of Caligula. So Josephus tells the story. He invited Caligula to a banquet, and Bekitsu, he managed to get out of him a promise to be Mevatel the whole plan. So now, when this governor's letter, the governor Petronius, the fellow's name was, when his letter reached Caligula, so Caligula wrote him back two letters. He said, he wrote him back a letter. He said, okay, I hear what you're saying, fine, I'm going to be a nice guy, because I'm Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm going to cancel the Gzeira. On the other hand, though, you had the chutzpah to go against me, so you better commit suicide, and if not, then I'm sending my soldiers after you. Meanwhile, shortly after that, Caligula was assassinated.
Wow.
So obviously they sent a letter from Rome informing everybody about that. Bashkocha Pratis, the second letter, got to this governor before the first one. So he never ended up having to follow through with the threat from the first one. Anyway, there was a whole thing. Megillas Tainis tells the story, mentioning also this Gaskalgas, tells the story briefly, and says that it was on Chof Beis Shvat. So according to that, then, on the face of it, we're talking about something that happened on Yom Kippur, but based on that, it might be that it's actually the same story as in Megillas Tainis, in which case it happened later, it happened several months later, and when it says he heard a voice from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then it would mean that he heard it coming from the Kodesh HaKadoshim while he was doing the Avodah and the Heichol or the Azara, or what have you. One other point in that connection is, who is Shimon HaTzadik then? Usually Shimon HaTzadik is the one from Pirkei Avos. He's at the beginning of the Second Beis Mikdash, 300 years before Caligula. But we do know that there were a lot of Kohenim Gedolim in the time of the Second Beis Mikdash. There were over 300, the Gemara tells us in Yuma. And there was Taka 1 around that time whose name was Shimon. So it's argued that maybe Shimon HaTzadik over here means not the Shimon HaTzadik from Pirkei Avos, but rather a later Kohen Gadol who was named Shimon and who was a Tzadik enough to be able to hear a Baskel.
It's interesting that both stories are about wars and Yom Kippur,
Yeah, because these are things that are negayah to the whole Jewish people. Anyway, so the point is, in both these cases, we see that the baskel came in Aramaic. And on the face of it, it's the voice of a malach. So we see the malachim do speak Aramaic. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, by the same a baskel shiny, it may be different with a baskel. It's meant to inform everybody. And therefore, so it's going to be in different languages. Sometimes it'll be in one language, some with another. Whatever message Hashem has to have delivered to the world. And if it's Aramaic that they understand, then the baskel will speak in Aramaic. So it doesn't necessarily have to involve a malach. The Boisema, another possibility, Gavriel Hava. The other possibility, specifically, the Baskel was the voice of Gavriel. We learn later in the parak, when it talks about in connection with Yosef, Bo Gavriel, Velinda Shivan Loshen, that Gavriel overnight taught Yosef all 70 languages, including Aramaic. So therefore, Gavriel is the linguist among Malachim, so fine. He knows and he considers Aramaic just as important as any other language. So the Baskel could have been his language. Now, what about then, in that case, what about, we said before, the Malachi Asharis don't deal with Aramaic tefillis. Marashal says, okay, very simple. Gabriel is not necessarily the one in charge of bringing the tefillis in front of Eibishter. So therefore, there you're dealing with other Malachim, and they don't care for, they don't consider Lashon Arami important, or they don't understand it, or whatever as the case may be. Gabriel is the one exception, fine, but you can't depend that he's going to be the one bringing your tefillis before the Eibishter. Okay, so the bottom line is, in other words, that there are cases where you can daven, that we can daven in any language, but it has to be with Sibur, where the Sibur is doing like a one-off tefillah, or we're saying, according to somebody showing him, there are a number of exceptions where Yochid could daven in Lashon Arami or in other languages, but when it's B'Yochid, and not that, then a person should be davening in Lashon Kodesh when it requires a Malachim to help him out. Okay. Next. Piska, so now quoting further from the Mishnah, brachos of klolus ketzad. How were the brachos of klolus done? Even Malachim can't come in, but yeah, it could be that he said that all Gemara may be arguing with that point, right? And then he says also, maybe it depends whether Mislabshin b'dmus Adam, yeah, it depends. If they're in a group. You know what? There's a similar kind of distinction made as far as Eliyahu HaNavi. We usually say that Eliyahu HaNavi, we have in various places in the Gemara where Eliyahu HaNavi appears to Chachamim and teaches them points in Halacha and whatever, and Tishvi Yitaris Kushis Viboyis, and then on the other hand, Loi B'Shamayim. So what the one answer is, there is a difference whether Eliyahu is Neslavish and a Guf or not. When he's Neslavish and a Guf, then he's able to function like a human being, and then he, being a great Chacham, is able to teach people Torah and Pasuk and Halacha and so forth, whereas we're not the Nazi. So yeah, the Yom Yaakov's distinction over here about the Malachim being Neslavish and a Guf or not would be a similar kind of distinction here. Okay, so Brachas HaKlolus Ketzad, how were the Brachas HaKlolus done? Kivin Sha'ori Yisrael, so Yarden Kola, the Jewish people crossed the Yarden and they came to Har Grizim and Har Abel and they had the whole ceremony over there. And the mission describes it, and the mission describes in great detail how they did it. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabban, we learn in a Braisa, there's Machlokas, how, in Parashat A, Hashem describes to Moshe, and he in turn describes to the Jewish people where they're going to go for the Brachas HaKlolus. So the pasuk goes like this, Halohema, after he says that you're going to have the Bracha on HaGrizim and the Klola on HaRevel, Moshe continues, Halohema be'ever HaYarden, are they not on the other side of the Yarden? Remember at this point they're still on the east side of the Yarden, so aren't they on the other side, on the western side of the Yarden? Achre, derech mevoi hashemesh. Achre means after, or further away. Derech mevoi hashemesh means the way of the sun's going. That's what Gemara is going to discuss over here, what that means exactly. And whether achre, derech goes together or not. Anyway, the Eretz HaKnani, in the land of the Knani, Hayosha Ba'arava, who lives in the Arava, which is the valley through which the Yarden flows. Mul HaGilgal, opposite Gilgal, Eitzel Elone Moda, near Elone Moda. So we have two different ways of understanding what these psukim mean. So first, Halohema be'ebra yarden means me'ebra yarden me'elach divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda starts by saying be'ebra yarden means, in other words, that Hashem is telling them, you should know these places are on the west side of the Yarden and far beyond the crossing of the Yarden. They're not near the Yarden. Me'ebra yarden me'elach divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda explains that's the first part of the pasuk means that. Then he continues explaining the rest of the pasuk. Achrei derech mevoi Hashemesh. After the way of the going of the sun. Now, Mevoi HaShemesh, he's understanding is, now usually Mevoi HaShemesh would usually mean the sun setting. But here, Rabbi Yehuda is taking it to mean the sun's rising. So therefore, so the Radal talks about in the back of the Gemara, talks about what makes Rabbi Yehuda say that is basically because since the continuation of the Pasuk is going to make it clear that we're talking about a place very distant from the Yarden, so it can't be on the east, so therefore it has to be it's far away from the east, meaning well towards the west. If it's the west, you can't say it's Akrei Derech Mavaya Shemesh, to the way of the sun setting. Instead, it has to be after, meaning far away from the way of the sun's rising. So that forces them to understand, but Mivoya Shemesh, as the sun's rising. So in other words, it's far away from where the sun seems to rise, which is in the east, rather it's towards the west. Makom Shachama Zerachas is telling you, starting out in the east, which is where the Yarden is. The Yarden flows along the east side of Eretz Canaan, and instead you're going to have to go quite a distance from there before you reach the place. Achrei, meaning far away. Maharsha explains that actually, according to that, Achrei Derech is one thing. It means far away from the way of the sun's rising. Now, Rashi on the Pasuk takes a different view of it. Rashi on the Pasuk explains that Achrei has a separating trup on it. It has a pashta, and then Derech also has a separating trup on it, a yisiv, and therefore Rashi explains it's not meant to be read as Achrei Derech, beyond the road, but rather two separate things. Achrei, far away, Derech Mavoya Shemesh, in the direction of the sun's setting. In which case, we can take Mavoya Shemesh to mean the sun's setting, but Maharsha points out that doesn't seem to fit with either of the opinions in our Gemara over here. It was a preposterous. I mean, Rashi usually tries to do pshat in context of the pasuk. He doesn't necessarily care whether it fits with what the Gemara says on the subject. Rabbi Yehuda continues, Be'eretz Knani, the pasuk is saying that these mountains are located in the land of the Knani. In the land of the Knani who live in the Arava. Now, what is that place? Elo Hagrizim, Behar Evel, Sheyoshim Behem Kusim. It's referring to the well-known Hagrizim and Har Evel near the city of Shechem, where now the Kusim live there. Now, the Kusim didn't live there in the time when the Torah was given, but Yehuda is identifying it based on later on, Sancheirev, 800 years after the Torah was given, Sancheirev took the Aseret HaShvatim into Golos and repopulated the area with the Kusim, and in Yehuda's time, several hundred years after Sancheirev, they're still there. There's still a remnant of them there. Adayim Azeh. You ever go to Hagrizim? It's quite an interesting place to visit. You drive around over there. They call it Hagrizim. They also call it Habracha. You can find over there street signs and storefronts and whatever that have things that have they're written in the ancient Shemreni script, which is basically based on, you have in the time of the first Beis Mikdash, the Jews use a script called Ksav Ivri, which you find on ancient monuments, coins and whatnot. The Shemronim, the Kusim, took that over and continued using a variant of it, and they use it Ada Yemazeh for their Sifrei Torah and for their various other books. So now Rabbi Yehuda says, you want to know what this place is. Nowadays, you'll find the Kusim are living there. Back then, when the Torah was given, the Knanim were living there. Next, he continues, Mul HaGilgal. When it says Mul HaGilgal, he says that means Samoch HaGilgal, means it's close to Gilgal. Elone Murda, and when the pasuk continues that it's near Elone Murda, what is Elone Murda? Shem. Elone Murda is another name for Shem. How do we know that? Well, the Halan Oema, because we have earlier in Chumash Bereishis in Parshas Lech Lecha, where when Avraham first came to Eretz Yisrael, Vayaver Avraham Ba'aretz Ad Mekayim Shem Ad Elone Murda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Mal Elon Murda Ha'omel Ahalan Shem. So just like over there, Elon Murda is another name for Shem. Afkan Shem, the same way over here, Elon Murda means Shem. So it's saying that these two mountains are near Shem. And in fact, yeah, Har Gerizim and Har Evel are on the two sides of Shem. So that's how Rabbi Yehuda learns the pasuk. So in other words, the pasuk is telling them, you're going to cross the Yarden, you're going to go quite a distance into the interior of Eretz Yisrael, all the way to Shem, all the way to Har Gerizim and Har Evel, and that's where you're going to do the Barachas of Klavos. So the Gemara continues. Tanya, and actually takes out the word Tanya over here because it's not really a new Braisa. This is all a continuation. This is one long Braisa. You look in the back of a Gemara Sota, you have Tesefta on Sota. Basically, the Gemara is going to go over here over the next couple of blocks, is going to go through Braisa by Braisa, the entire Tesefta on this Perek. So Omer Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, the Dover says the Yafti Sifrei Kusiyim. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi points out, in this matter, I showed that the books of the Kusim, these Kusim, the Shemronim, that we were just talking about, that their books are forged. I showed that they inserted a forgery, they inserted something into the Torah that doesn't really belong over there. Amarti lahem, because I explained to them, ziyaftim teraschem, here you've altered and falsified your Torah, v'loi ha'elisim v'yedchem klum, but in the end you didn't really accomplish anything. You're using this alteration in order to uphold your version of Torah. Now you believe only in Torah Shebichtav, and you say that Elohim Moreh, that pasuk is Shem, and therefore you use that as a basis for saying that Shem. Now we find in many places in the Gemara and various other sources that the Kusim considered Adar Yom Hazeh, they consider the area of Har Gerizim to be the, they consider that to be Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem. You have to remember, the Chumash never identifies over and over. It says Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem, but it never says the name Yerushalayim. The first place in Tanakh, the name Yerushalayim appears in Sefer Yehoshua. So it never actually explicitly says in Chumash that the site of the Beis Hamikdash is Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem. So they came up with the notion that it's Har Gerizim, and they said, after all, the Torah tells us to build a Mizbeach on Har Evel over there as part of this whole ceremony, so that must be the area Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem. So in order to buttress that, they took where the third connection, Elohim Moreh, and they added the word Shem. So now the Belozer Rabbi Yossi is saying, you did that, but what good did you do? Listen, you know, we also agree that Elohim Moreh is Shem. The difference is, but we have a Gzeira Shabbat we learn it from, because from the Pasuk in Lech Lecha. But you don't hold a Gzeira Shabbat because you only hold of Torah Shabbat, you only hold of Torah Shabbat. After Mamalik Madjum, so how are you learning it? So here, you inserted that into your Chumash, and what good do you think it did? Because anyway, it's all falsified anyway. There's actually the Nisiv points out in his Pirush Meroy Mesada, he says Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is going further. He's saying, listen, you don't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh, and because of that, you refuse to believe that when the Pasuk says Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem means Yerushalayim. But listen, after all, in order to say that Shem is Hamokam Asher Yivchar Hashem, you still have to resort to a Gzeira Shabbat. So you still need Torah Shabbat Peh. So what are you gaining? You might as well accept our Torah Shabbat Peh and accept that Yerushalayim is the place. By the way, in this connection, so where did the Kusim after all get their Torah from? When you think about it, so the Pasuk describes that they were brought to Shomron and that part of Eretz Yisrael by Sancheiriv. Originally, they were complete Ovid Avod Zara, and they're being attacked by lions, so they send a message to Sancheiriv that the Jewish God apparently doesn't like us worshipping Avod Zara in his country, and we need to learn Yiddishkeit, so he sends them a Kohen from the Aseret HaShvatim, and he teaches them the basics of Yiddishkeit, and then for a while, the Pasuk describes they're worshipping Hashem, and they're also worshipping Beshittuf with their Avod Zara. Later on, it became Machlokas throughout Shas, whether they ever accepted true Yiddishkeit or not. Anyway, the vote would be, when you think about it, where did they get the Torah from? From the Aseret HaShvatim. Well, the Aseret HaShvatim, to begin with, never accepted that Yerushalayim is the place Hashem chose. That's why they had Yerovam's Egle Azahav. The whole point was that he argued that there's no particular place that Hashem chose, and we can worship Hashem wherever we want. So the Kusim took over the same idea. So now, in their Torahs, they added the word Shem over there in order to try to uphold this point, and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi is saying the whole thing is a forgery anyway. They are the same as the Samaritans, yeah. Okay, so we'll continue with that tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula, Ches 7. So the Rebbe talks about, you know, you have the famous thing about in the 600th year of Noach, all the fountains of the deep were opened up, and the Arubas Hashemayim Niftochu, and the Zohar says famously about that it means that in the sixth century of the sixth millennium, the wellsprings of lower wisdom and the wellsprings of upper wisdom are going to be opened up, and the world is going to be prepared, ready, and made ready to go into the seventh millennium. So that means, in other words, that you have the Chochma Le'ela is Chochma Satora, which the Tertus Achsidus and higher levels of Tertus Achsidus began to be revealed around that time, around the year 5-600, 1840, Lemanyanam, and Chochmas al-Latati of tremendous amounts of Chochmas Umas al-Olam that became revealed at that time, the whole industrial revolution and the whole scientific revolution and all that took place. So all of that was preparation, all of that is preparation for Yemos HaMashiach. Okay. Continuing with Halachas of Yom Tov. So let's see. We were talking about catching animals on Yom Tov and about shechting them. If you do shecht on Yom Tov and you find it treif, then it would be muktzah, so you can't do anything with it. An animal, actually, you would be allowed to, so it's not miskalkel, but not a bird. And then if you could even, if need be, sell it to a goy. But really, actually, then you shouldn't shecht on Yom Tov only with tzorach gadol. So the Alter Rebbe says that actually if you really need it on Yom Tov, you can be mekel. Practically speaking, I don't think we really find anybody nowadays who shechts on Yom Tov anymore, especially because treifas are more common now than they used to be. Anyway, even if you do, you can't weigh the meat, and you can't weigh the meat to sell by weight, and you can't fix the price for it. You just give them a piece, and then after yumptive, work things out. By the same token, also, if you do shecht an animal, don't shecht the lungs until after you take off the skin, because you won't be able to strip the skin off if you find it trefa, and like this, you don't want the skin to be ruined. And then there are certain things you can do with it in order to prevent it from rotting altogether, but you can't, there are certain basic things that you can do. The Mishnah mentions an example called the Tiru Soy from the Shum Trilos, and the Chamim had to allow you to do something with the skin, because otherwise you're not going to want to shecht the animal at all, but very little that you can do. And the same thing, for example, feathers. So the same thing, feathers from an animal, from a bird that you shechted that day, you'd be able to put them away, but other feathers would be also. And after that, add specifically, we're talking about whole feathers, whereas if it's little downy feathers, those you can use to put in a pillow, and so those are not necessarily muktzan yamdiv. Yeah.